Our study continues at this time in the 10th chapter of Joshua. Last time we had gotten through the 8th verse, and we find in this chapter that there are five kings that have united to fight against the city of Gibeon, and the Gibeonites have appealed to Joshua to give them aid, since they now are in league with the Israelites, and since they are now the servants of the Israelites, and we have to assume that they're proselytes to this religion of the true God. And so these five kings, which are led by the king of Jerusalem, Adonizedek, seem to be a very formidable foe against which Israel is going to have to come. And since the people of Gibeon appealed to Joshua for aid, we find that Joshua is very prompt in responding to giving them aid. And so we see that the proselytes in the Jewish religion are just as important and just as valuable and just as much in need of protection as those that are born in the land. For the law applies just as much to one as it does to the other. So in verse 7, Joshua ascended from Gilgal, he and all the people of war with him and all the mighty men of valor. And the Lord said unto Joshua, fear them not, for I have delivered them into thine hand. There shall not a man of them stand before thee. So he assures Joshua that he is going to have the victory and to go ahead and get on with the business of carrying this thing out. So verse 9, Joshua therefore came up unto them suddenly and went up from Gilgal all night. So we see Joshua didn't waste any time. Suddenly or immediately, he prepared his army and left. And the Bible states that he went up from Gilgal all night, so that they marched all night. So you can see what a fatiguing job this is, to march all night and then be prepared to fight all the next day. But that's what Joshua and his men did. So we see that this represents a lot of effort and diligent determination and hard work on the part of Joshua and his men. Although God is going to give them the victory, God has promised them that he would defeat the enemies before them, they have to work, and they have to work hard. And, of course, they could have complained. They could have said, you mean this is the land of rest? This is the land that we've been wanting to come to, and here we have to go through all this misery and drudgery and lose a night's sleep to carry out this this will of God. And the same is true of us in the church today. We in the church will find that there may be times when we're going to lose a night's sleep for the work of the church. There may be times when we're going to have to give up rest in order to be about the will and the duty and the work of God. And although God has promised us the victory, he's promised us salvation, nevertheless, we have a job to do that's our work. And our work is going to require energy, effort, time, and sacrifice on our part to be able to carry it out. And that's what happened here with Joshua and his men. They went up from Gilgal all night. Verse 10, and the Lord discomfited them before Israel and slew them with a great slaughter at Gibeon and chased them along the way that goeth up to Beth-horon and smote them to Azekah and unto Makeda. Now we see here that God does bring defeat upon the Confederate kings who have united against Joshua and the Israelites. And he names here the fact that he chased them along the way that goeth up to Beth-horon. And we might note that Beth-horon is to the north of Gibeon. And then he smote them to Azekah and unto Makeda. And these two places, Azekah and Makeda, are south of Gibeon. So the men spread in both directions in trying to flee the onslaught of the Israelite army. And yet they were smote in both places, north and south. Verse 11, and it came to pass, as they fled from before Israel, and were in the going down to Beth-horon, that the Lord cast down great stones from heaven upon them unto Azekah, and they died. And they were more which died with hailstones than they whom the children of Israel slew with the sword. So God intervened here to help give the victory. And he did this by causing great hailstones to fall upon those who were fleeing. And the hailstones made them die. And of course, it's not hard for us to see how that hailstones could be of such a great magnitude and force to bring about death when they would fall on someone. And no doubt they were not expecting a hail at this time. And it was a miraculous thing brought on by God. And he states very plainly that more died with the hailstones than they whom the children of Israel slew with the sword. Another thing that would have to be miraculous about this is for the hail to fall only on the enemies and not to fall on the Israelites too. But apparently, that's the way it did happen. Now, beginning in verse 12, we're going to have another very great miracle recounted here. Then spake Joshua to the Lord in the day when the Lord delivered up the Amorites before the children of Israel. And he said in the sight of Israel, Sun, stand thou still upon Gibeon, and thou moon in the valley of Ajalon. Now, we have to realize that Joshua approached God and asked God for assistance. He spake to the Lord. Then Joshua spake to the Lord. Now, we don't know what all Joshua said to God, nor what all God said back to Joshua. But we must understand that somehow or other, Joshua asked for an extension of the day. Apparently, they had fought all day. They were being successful. But the battle was going to be brought to a conclusion by the coming on of night. And so, in order to be able to continue to have the victory, Joshua asked for an extension of the day. And no doubt, God does grant it to him. God tells Joshua that this will happen, because otherwise Joshua would be very presumptuous to call upon the moon and the sun to stand still. He's bound to have known through faith that God was going to bring this about, that God would allow it to happen before he made his command for the sun and the moon to stand still. And we do see that Joshua did speak to the Lord in that day. And although we do not know exactly what was said by God and by Joshua, we have to assume from what happened that this was the gist of the prayer that Joshua made to God. Now, as he speaks to the sun and the moon to stand still, what he's actually doing is prolonging the day. And Joshua said in the sight of Israel, Sun, stand thou still upon Gibeon, and thou moon in the valley of Ajalon. So, in the presence of all Israel, so that they can all see what Joshua is doing, he commits himself to his faith. He speaks to the sun and to the moon to stand still. Now, God could have just as easily caused this to have happened without Joshua having to speak. But by Joshua speaking, he commits himself. He's either a very foolish person who doesn't have any good sense left in him to be speaking like this, or he is very knowledgeable of the will of God, and he's acting upon that faith that he has in God's will. Of course, we know that the latter is true in this case. Now, he says to ask the sun to stand still upon Gibeon, which is, of course, the central city around which the attacking kings have launched their assault. And it's also the city that Israelites are now defending. And for the moon to stand still in the valley of Ajalon. And the valley of Ajalon is a valley close to Gibeon. Now, of course, we know that it's not the sun and the moon that do the moving that cause our days and nights, but it's the earth that revolves. And so what was really happening here is that the earth was standing still, and it made it appear like the sun and the moon were standing still. And very likely in this day and time, in the people's minds, it was the sun that was moving and the moon that was moving, and God had not yet allowed it to be a part of the knowledge of man to know anything different. And it's just like if we're driving along in a car at 50 miles an hour and we open up the door and look down at the ground, it looks like the ground is rushing by and moving, when actually the ground is still. It's the car that's moving. And in order for us to get the ground to stop moving, we have to stop the car. But we could speak and say, I'd like for this ground to stop rushing by. And what we're really doing is wanting the car to stop moving. Well, that's the same thing that's true here. When he tells the moon and the sun to stand still, it's actually the earth that's standing still. And the sun stood still, and the moon stayed. Now, we don't have any reason to think that he had to have the moon to help in the battle, but it's a matter of when one stands still, the other stands still. And so he spoke to the moon too. And consequently, it didn't throw out of kelter all of the other heavenly constellations by having everything to stop. And of course, when the earth stopped moving, it meant that everything else in relation did stop moving. So the sun stood still, the moon stayed until the people had avenged themselves upon their enemies. Now this made for a long day. Remember, these people had marched all night to get to the battle, and then they had fought all day, and as the sun seemed to be going down and the battle was going to be brought to an end and they could not conclude it that day, then they asked through Joshua for a prolongation of the day, which did happen. Now, we can imagine then how very weary these soldiers were becoming. They had marched all night, fought all day, and now instead of rejoicing at the darkness that would let them get some rest, they wanted the day to be made longer so they could continue to fight even longer. And as he says later on down, it hasted not to go down about a whole day. So this sun stayed up about twice the length that it ordinarily would have for a given day. Now if this were the middle of summer, which some Bible scholars seem to think that it was, then it means that the sun ordinarily would be up for about 14 hours, and if it was prolonged for another whole day, then this sun would have shined about 28 hours on that day. So after marching all night and then fighting for a 28-hour period, this could be very grueling and energy-consuming. And no doubt we had a very weary army. However, when a person is fighting for the things of God, when a person is fighting a spiritual battle, he can, because of his zeal, his energy reserves may be greatly increased. And we find that today as we live the Christian life. We can fight and use a tremendous amount of energy toward doing those things that we know that are right, in which in ordinary circumstances we would be made unduly weary and have to stop for rest. So he says, is not this written in the book of Jasher? Now, this book of Jasher is a book we didn't have a record of, but apparently it was available during the day that this book of Joshua was written, and refers to it as a record to verify the fact that this did happen. So the sun stood still in the midst of heaven and hastened out to go down about a whole day. And there was no day like that before it or after it, that the Lord hearkened unto the voice of a man, for the Lord fought for Israel. Now this is one day that was an unusual day. There was no other day like it before or since. A day in which the Lord hearkened unto the voice of a man. And as we think of this sun and moon not moving, and of this day being prolonged for an extra long period of time, we think of some of the reasons why this was done. God could have given them the victory the next day. He didn't have to make the day longer for the victory to happen. Through all the miraculous means that God used, there would have been no problem for them to accomplish the victory. But this was one way that God could magnify Joshua and show him to be a particular favorite son, and one that he did delight to give honor to. And of course, Joshua was a type of Jesus Christ, who has all power both in heaven and in earth, and one to whom the winds and the seas will obey. Also, another reason that he could have caused this miracle to happen was so that he could notify to all the world that he was doing this for his people Israel here in Canaan. Since the sun was over Gibeon, the eye of the world must be fixed for some hours upon Gibeon and this valley of Ajalon, and to show that this was the center of the activity of God for this time, that God was now certainly with his people Israel, and he was going to do whatever was required to give them the victory. Another reason for causing the sun and the moon to stand still would be that it would help to convince and to confound those idolaters that worship the sun and the moon. Those that would give great honor and glory to the sun and the moon to the point of counting them as being a god. God would hereby demonstrate that he has power over the sun and the moon, that they are subject to him and to his desires, and that they're not to be worshipped, that he is the God, he is the true and the living God, because of all the idolatry of the world, this worship of the sun and moon seems to be the most prevalent and the one most easy for people to fall into. Another interesting thing to note here is that just as the sun standing over one position for a double length of time indicates that the works of God are works of light and not darkness, that when God's truth shines, it illuminates things, and whereas the powers of the devil want to work in darkness and ignorance of men, we see just the opposite of this happening when our Savior was crucified. On that day, the sun turned dark at noon, because this was when a terrible shadow was cast upon the glory of God. So this passage is an account of one of the great miracles of God, and truly a great sign for all the world to know that he was with his people Israel. So this great victory at Beth Horon involves the third great miracle that God has done for his people. Number one, the parting of the waters of the Jordan River so that they could cross over on dry land. Number two, the great fall of the city of Jericho when the walls miraculously fell down flat. And now thirdly, when the sun stood still for a whole day so they could continue this battle. And by defeating these kings at Beth Horon, Joshua has pretty well gotten control over the southern part of the land now. The southern kingdoms are fairly well subdued to his power. Although we're going to see that at this point in the narrative, the battle at this particular area is not completely finished. In verse 15, "And Joshua returned, and all Israel with him, unto the camp to Gilgal." So apparently Joshua had the idea that the battle was about over. There was no more true thing to be accomplished at this time, so he and the rest of Israel went back to the camp at Gilgal. Verse 16, "But these five kings fled and hid themselves in a cave at Makeda." Now, the five kings were still alive. They somehow or other had gotten together and had hidden themselves in a cave over at Makeda, and they thought possibly by hiding in this cave that they could have safety, that it would be their protection. And it was told Joshua, saying, "The five kings are hid in a cave at Makeda." And Joshua said, "Roll great stones upon the mouth of the cave, and set men by it for to keep them." Now, Joshua saw that there was more work to be done. And rather than expend their energies on the five kings in the cave now, he just says to roll great stones over the mouth of it, seal it over, guard it, and let this cave that they were going to use as a refuge now become their prison, and you're going to just keep them there. Verse 19, "And stay ye not, but pursue after your enemies, and smite the hindmost of them. Suffer them not to enter into their cities, for the Lord your God hath delivered them into your hand." So we see from this verse there were still some of the enemy that had yet to be taken care of. And so Joshua, rather than getting to stay in the camp at Gilgal with his men and rest, they have to pursue on now and continue the war. And so he says, "Stay ye not, but pursue after your enemies, smite the hindmost of them, and suffer them not to enter their cities." Now, those that made it to the cities would be more difficult to eradicate. So the thing to do was to encounter them while they were still out in the open field, and while they were fleeing, while they were retreating, smite them from the hindmost part, and do not let them enter into the cities. "For the Lord your God hath delivered them into your hand." These people are your possession in that you're going to be able to subdue them. You're going to be able to have the victory. God's delivered them to you, so carry it through. Do not stop now. Do not grow slack, but continue to press onward toward the victory. Verse 20, and it came to pass, when Joshua and the children of Israel had made an end of slaying them with a very great slaughter, till they were consumed, that the rest which remained of them entered into fenced cities. So there were a few who did escape. There were some who did get into the fenced cities for protection, but there was a very great slaughter. The vast majority from the narrative here seems to have been destroyed in the battle. Now, this may seem rather barbarous to us to read the account of how God's people fought with the enemy. But let us remember that these very same people had united together, and their purpose was to destroy Israel. They were going to do this very same thing to Israel had they gotten the opportunity. Let's also remember that they're not people of God. They are against the will of God and the ways of God, and consequently they are destined to be destroyed. No group, no force can stand long against the true and living God. And that's the situation they found themselves in, and as a result of their sin, as a result of their inability to be true to the one living God, they then were destined to be destroyed. And that's going to be the end of all people who are against the ways of God, who are outside the realm of righteousness and sanctification. And so this is just a lesson to us as to how very little protection all mankind has who happen to be in the disfavor of God. Well, we see our time has run out at that point, so we'll close at that verse. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying goodbye, friends.